folks, I know I'm not the most elegant guy on the internet. I know that. I know I'm probably the only guy teaching on the Book of Revelation who wears sports coats without shirts underneath them. I realize that. I realize I'm probably the only guy doing a video series on YouTube on the Book of Revelation who smokes a cigar every Friday, a used cigar at that. But that's okay, because I feel I'm in good company. I feel that I myself am an exile. And it's my conviction that while Daniel was weeping in supplication to God, and while his progenitor Jeremiah was doing the same thing, they were not worried about how they looked or how they sounded. They didn't have hundreds or thousands of people in their congregation. I don't have thousands of people. I don't even have a congregation. There are a few hundred people listening to me on YouTube. There may be thousands that will listen to me during the time of tribulation, or six dozen hardcore Israelites seeking wisdom about what God is doing, what He promised to do, what He is doing, what He will complete. I'm happy to be counted among the number of the ragtag fugitive fleet who are not only teaching these things but believing them. You're no different than me. You don't have a congregation. You don't belong to a congregation. You don't belong to a visible, organized congregation. You belong to the body of Christ, and the Spirit of God makes its home in you. Deep calls unto deep. Spirit of God calls unto the Spirit of God. That's why you recognize in me truth. It's not because of, it's in spite of the things that I do, in spite of how I talk, in spite of my posters, my cigar, my sports coats, whatever. It's in spite of all of that. So let's not make judgments based on looks. Why is it that the websites of the conspiracy people and the There's No Kingdom people, they're filled with stars and planets and flashing things and splashy websites, and they're all calling attention to their own interpretations of these things. I like to believe that this show is in contrast to all that. I told you that, and your life is certainly in contrast to all of that, because I know you, because you write me. I want you to write me. I need you to write me. And you're telling me how your life is going. You're telling me you're in the furnace of affliction. And you're telling me that the world is looking at you as if you're of no reputation, and you're not, and you won't be until the unveiling takes place. Because not only is Jesus Christ going to be unveiled, but you also will be unveiled in glory with Him. So Daniel is weeping, crying out to God concerning the sins of his people. And this is verse 20 of chapter 9. I love this. Because your prayers to God are heard. God doesn't, quote, answer prayers, unquote, like many of the popularity pastors today says He does. But He hears them. And after you pray, what happens? Do you get what you want? Not that I can ever tell. But you get peace. You get a peace which surpasses understanding, which is superior to every frame of mind. Daniel, verse 20, chapter 9. And while I am speaking, praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and casting my supplication before Yahweh my Elohim. There it is again. I love it. The God of place and the God of time. The God who puts things where they are, and the God who walks with us through the valley of the shadow of death. While I am casting my supplication before Yahweh my Elohim concerning the holy mountain of my Elohim. The mountain. He's talking about his homeland in Israel. The holy mount. The temple mount. Where the kings and priests are going to live during the 1,000 years, during the millennial kingdom, which Daniel is looking forward to. He's not allegorizing it. Nobody's telling him it's not real. They're all on the same page, the prophets. They're all on the same page talking about the same thing. Don't let anybody tell you that these men are idiots and that they're hoping for some ethereal non-kingdom, non-being, some allegorical mist. No, they're not. This guy is sitting on the floor of a literal kingdom, and he's given revelation concerning a kingdom that will follow that kingdom. Kingdom, 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 they're all literal. If you're going to take the kingdoms that Daniel saw in the second chapter of his dream of Nebuchadnezzar's image, the Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire, and you're going to make those allegorical, if you're going to take those literally, which you should because you can read about them in any history book, and you're going to say that in the days, you're going to see the sentence of the prophecy, in the days of these kings, I will set up my kingdom, and it will not come to harm for the eon. If you read that, and suddenly you're going to read about literal, 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 and you're going to suddenly make the last one allegorical, you have some explaining to do. The burden of proof lies with you, my friend, so you better come up with a website with some extra sparkles and extra flashing things, because you have nothing to go on except a supposition. No, it's very real. The mountain of my Elohim. What is that mountain? It's the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. What else? Even while I am speaking in my prayer, behold, the man Gabriel, whom I saw in the vision at the start, flying swiftly, is touching me. Gabriel, this is a spiritual being. A special one, not your typical angel, not said to be a human, but said to be a man. But it's an angelic being, said to be a man, appears as a man. Are you going to take that metaphorically? Well, that just, it doesn't stand for anything. We're describing here something that is actually happening. It's actually happening. Gabriel, whom I saw in the vision at the start, flying swiftly, is touching me at the time of the evening approach present. This celestial being became a man and touched Daniel at the time of the evening approach present. Any questions? Anybody want to allegorize this? Anybody want to tell us what God means by this? What's God really trying to say here? I contend to you and insist to you that God can say what he means and does so. And if it starts literal, then it ends literal. It's literal, literal, literal all the way through. That's the beauty of how we're approaching the unveiling of Jesus Christ. We're approaching it, giving God the dignity that allows him. Isn't that nice of us to allow God to say what he means and to mean what he says? And he is approaching and speaking with me, saying, he said words. These are the words. Daniel, now I fare forth to give you an intelligent understanding. An intelligent understanding concerning what I ask. What else? Daniel's prayer concerning his people. At the start of your supplications, a word. This gives me, literally just got chills. My chills are based on the word of God, not upon my feelings. At the start of your supplication, a word from Yahweh fared forth, and I come to tell you, for a man of coveted qualities are you. You're a man of coveted qualities, and yet this man was taken as a youth in chains to a foreign occupying power, to a foreign country, to a heathen king, told by God to go with it because I am with you. I am your sustainer. I am your sustenance. I will take care of you in that place. You're going to be in exile. But while you're there, I want you to build, to plant. I want you to read the scriptures, and I want you to stay connected with me because I know what I'm doing. I have not lost control. And as I told you when we were talking about the secrets in Daniel earlier this year from Florida, broadcasting those 50 shows on the secrets of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar became a man of coveted qualities after he was humbled and came to realize that God is the disposer. He's the El. He's also the Yahweh. He's also the time God, but he's also the El, the placer of all in humanity. And the heart of the king is like a river in the hand of God, and he bends it where he will. That's a man of coveted qualities. A man of coveted qualities will not look to his own imagination, will not look to his own hopes or dreams, but will seek the source of all wisdom. And the source of all wisdom is Yahweh. And now these words from Gabriel, this too moves me. Then understand what is in the word, and understand what is in the sight. In the sight. I've been told that the kingdom is not going to be seen. This is a scene we are reading about here that took place between a celestial magistrate and a human being in a country run by a heathen king that had taken God's people into subjection. Here's the epic sentence, verse 24, chapter 9. 70 sevens are segregated, big word, segregated, cut out for your people and for your holy city, none other than Jerusalem, to do these things, to detain transgression, to cause sin to end, to make a propitiatory shelter for depravity, to bring the righteousness of the eons, to seal the vision and the prophet, to anoint the Holy of Holies, period. Wow. Will you tell me if that's happened yet? There are three negative things here and three positive things. To detain transgression. Have you watched the news lately? Do you see transgression detained, stopped, halted, arrested? To cause sin to end. Have you seen sin ending for the people of Daniel, of Jeremiah, of Yahweh? To make a propitiatory shelter for depravity. That's the last negative thing. Now the positive. To bring righteousness. To bring the righteousness of the eons. The righteousness of the eons. Paul talks about it at the end of Romans chapter 11. Thus all Israel shall be saved according as it is written. And it's written here. And it was written in Genesis chapter 12. By Moses. The promise given to Abraham. It's written. The promise God made to his people. To bring the righteousness of the eons. We know what that means now because of our study of the eons. The two coming eons, Israel is going to receive righteousness. It hasn't happened yet. If you think it happens, it has happened, you're deceived. If you have to come up with some way that has happened, you're deceived. The only way you're going to come to an intelligent understanding is if you understand the times and you understand how God reckons time. Monday, I'm going to show you how God reckons time, how he's done it in the past, and how he's still doing it. Nothing has changed. God is in a big, fat, glorious, predictable rut. He's not doing anything different now, time-wise, than he's done before. And this is going to help us know when the kingdom to Israel will be fulfilled.